Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 25th of Sivan. Today we're going to see a result from Shut Igrot Moshe from the Chelek of Kodshim in Tarot. We occasionally get an opportunity to see Rav Moshe finally thinking about things that aren't actually practical, and just see him reasoning through halachic issues that come up and get a sense of that. So this is from Simon Yud Aleph, and from the 25th of Sivan of Tavshin Yud Chet of 1958. And the question at hand was the comment of Rabbeinu Yonah in Avot, in the fifth parak of Avot, the fifth Mishnah. The Mishnah lists miracles that occurred regularly in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, and one of those miracles was that they never found a psul in Lechem HaPanim. In the Lechem HaPanim is the bread, the 12 loaves of bread that were in the Beit HaMikdash week to week. They were traded for new ones every Shabbat, and then the old ones were given to the Kohanim to eat. And what Rabbeinu Yonah says is, Kibiyom HaShabbat Yarchenu, you put in the new ones on Shabbat, and it's warm when you took it away, Bishat HaSarato, the next week, it was warm like the day when you put it in. That was one of the things that happened to it. That's not a miracle that the Mishnah is listing, but that's part of what happened, that it stayed warm and fresh. So when the Kohanim ate it, even though it's a week old, it was warm and fresh, and you never found the psul in it. Lo biyotze velo belina, that it wasn't. It didn't get taken out of the right area, the right place for it to be eaten, and it didn't stay over when it wasn't supposed to be eaten. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes, "This is the problematic part." Shayu tzrichim oto leechol b'shavua she'achar haShabbat she'hasiru. It had to be eaten within the week after they removed it from the Lechem HaPanim, from the Shulchan, from the table in the first room, in the middle room of the Beit HaMikdash, and it never did. And if it had been left over to the following week, he says, V'nishar l'shavu acheret hu nifsal. Left over the following week, it would become pasul. So Rav Moshe has a great problem with his words, because the simplest understanding we're going to see is that he thinks that that Lechem HaPanim has to be eaten that day, not that following week. Now, this is actually an issue. It's a serious issue. He's not making up an issue. It's a problematic Rabbeinu Yonah. I will say, and it's not our topic, so I'm not going to go into it, but I did briefly look at other sources. I checked in my Bar Ilan, and there's a comment, there's an explanation of the Gemara that runs through, they sort of collects other Achronim called, I think, Kavruta, no, Daf al Daf, and they mention others who try to figure out what Rabbeinu is talking about. So you sort of have two options. Rav Moshe is going to take the option. Rav Fence is going to take the option. That we're going to try to say, for all that the Rabbeinu Yonah says, they have the whole week to eat it, he really meant that night, they have until the end of that night. We'll talk about that. That's the tshuva here. There weren't that many who talked about it, but several other Achronim that I saw took the opposite position, that for some reason Rabbeinu Yonah in fact thinks that you have the whole week, and then you have to explain what would lead Rabbeinu Yonah to think you have the whole week. So it is, to me, interesting to watch Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is, to me, an experience I've had before with Rav Moshe Feinstein, to be so certain and so confident in an assumption of his that he doesn't even entertain the other possibility. Meaning, if you could find some reasonable way that Rabbeinu Yonah could hold that you have the whole next week to eat the Lechem HaPanim, then it's not a problem. It would just be another perspective. But Rav Moshe Feinstein is positive that can't be true. It's just so clear to him that that can't be true. So that's what we're going to see today. So he says, the Lechem HaPanim, the din is she'ochlin oto biyom ha-shabbat she'silku. And then he says, u'b'leil mosay Shabbat, right? You have the day of Shabbos, right? You take the Lechem HaPanim off, put the new Lechem HaPanim, the new showbread on, and the old showbread off on Shabbat. You have that day of Shabbat to eat it, and you have Motzei Shabbat, like all Kachim. This is a reminder that, you know, we are socialized, it's probably not the right word, but we as observant Jews are trained from our youngest ages that in Halacha, the night starts the day, right? The day is called, in Halachic parlance, Yom Holech Achar HaLaila. The day goes after the night. You know this from Shabbos, this is an example, right? When does Shabbos start? It starts Friday night. Why does it start Friday night? Because in Halacha, when the night falls on what we call Friday, on the sixth day after nightfall, that's already the seventh day, because we think that night starts the day. That's true in Halacha as we experience it. But when it comes to Kachim, when it comes to things having to do with the Beit HaMikdash, having to do with the temple and the sacrifices, of the services, there the halacha is that halayla holecha chahrayom, that the night follows the day. So, for example, if you bring a korban, even if it's a korban, then it has to be eaten that day. even if the korban that has to be eaten that day, then it can be eaten that night as well, at least until midnight. So why? Because the night follows the day in that situation. So here too, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, see, it must be that the lechem aponim, the showbread, has to be able to be eaten not just on the Shabbos, but on the night following the Shabbos, which is Motzei Shabbat, until the next morning, midday right, until Abud HaShachar comes, until the break of dawn the next morning on a Torah level, and a rabbinic level, which people may remember from the early Mishnayos and Brachos, on a rabbinic level, it's until Chatzot, it's until midnight. So all of that is simple and obvious and true to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that's got to be true, he's saying, of the Lechem upon him as well. Now he does know that the Rambam, in his Perush Mishnayos, on the second chapter of Menachot, talks about the Lechem upon him. The Rambam says it's only eaten on Yom HaShabbat, on the day of Shabbat alone. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, Pashut, and that's a word that I'm highlighting in this context, because what's Pashut to Rav Moshe Feinstein isn't always Pashut to everybody. So he operates with what's clear and obvious to him. Others, people do it too. He's not the only one, but it's striking to me. I always notice it in him, that he comes to an understanding of something that then becomes so clear and obvious to him, he doesn't even imagine other possibilities. So here too, the Rambam says you have to eat lechem upon him. In this case, I happen to think he's right. The Rambam says lechem upon him in that day. Clearly, he doesn't mean that day. He must mean that you have the night following, because you always have the night following, and it's also called Yom HaShabbat Bilvad Mishum Shadeh Kodashim Halayla Ochel Har Yom. Because when it comes to Kodashim, night follows day. As we have in Kulin, and there's Mishnah Menachos, also Mishnah Menachos Daf Kuf, which says Lech Panim Ne'achal. Now this is the central source that others raise as well when they're worried about this issue. We're talking about this issue with Rabbi Yonah. The Mishnah in Menachos and Daf Kuf says that the Lechem Aponim is Ne'achal Lo Yoter Al Achadasar Shehu Bechalush Ne'amim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah Kodem HaShabbat. The idea being that if Rosh Hashanah falls Thursday, Friday, what we call Thursday, Friday, you have a problem because you can't bake the Lechem Aponim on Rosh Hashanah, because the baking of the Lechem Aponim is not a malacha that is doche Yom Tov, and therefore you're going to have to bake it on Erev Yom Tov. That'll be Wednesday, which is 11 days before the following Shabbat. And that'll be the longest time period you could possibly have with how long the Lechem Aponim is out there on the showbread. So the Rashi there raises a problem. He says, I don't understand. If Yom Kippur, when on the years that Rosh Hashanah is Thursday, Friday, Yom Kippur is Shabbos, you can't eat the Lechem Aponim on Shabbos then. So it's not going to be eaten for 11 days. It's not going to be 11 days between the time that it's baked and the time that it's eaten. It's going to have to be 12 days. So Rashi there says, in terms of Kodshim, like we said before, night follows day, and therefore even they're eating it that night in Motzei Yom Kippur. Can you imagine having Lechem Aponim Motzei Yom Kippur? Even they're eating Lechem Aponim Motzei Yom Kippur, it's called Yud Aleph Yom. It's called 11 days. V'chein kemo shekatavti, also, that you can have the two the shtei alechem, which is the korban that's brought, the special korban that's brought on Shavuot, is eaten on Yom Atzeret. But kavanato gam lemotzai Yom Atzeret, shagam halayla nikra leinyan kashim Yom Atzeret. Right, it's called Shavuos even the night afterwards. So when you offer the shtei alechem on Shavuos, it's not that you have to eat them on Shavuos itself. You can eat them that night as well. So that's another example for Moshe Feinstein of where you see that the night following the day means that even a Motzai Shabbos or a Motzai Yom Tov will be, there you might have thought it's different because it's so different a day, right? Yom Shabbos is Shabbos and Yom Tov is Yom Tov and Motzai is a whole different thing. You might have thought it was different enough that we wouldn't use that language for it, but this is the way we understand those Mishnayos and these Gemaras that talk about these issues and say, no, that's what it means. He does notice that there's a Bartanura there, where the Bartanura seems to sound like if you wanted to make something Pigul, and let's remember that Pigul is where you offer something, the various things, but you offer, let's say, a sacrifice, and as the person's offering it, they're thinking, they're planning to eat it beyond the time when it's allowed to be eaten. So let's say I'm offering a korban todah, and that's really only eaten for a day and a night. But I, for some reason, think it's got the same rule as a shlamim, so I think I'm allowed to eat it for 2 days. So if I think that as it's being offered, it becomes pigul and it's completely unusable. I'm not allowed to use it. So in that discussion, the Rebbe Tanura seems to sound like somebody planned to eat it Motzai Shabbos or Motzai to eat something, or the lechem apanim to eat them motzai shavuot, it sounds like he means that that would make it pigul. So Rav Moshe says, no, but it clearly can't mean that. Again, pashut and vadai are these key words that are worth paying attention to. Certainly he couldn't mean that because, as the Tosfos Yotzef says, that we have in terms of that Mishnah we saw before, when it comes to the lechem apanim, that they can be eaten after 11 days, if Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, and you're going to give them out that night, the Barchinua himself had said, you can eat Motzoi Shabbos. So that's how you understand 11 days. So it must be that even Barchinua, meaning it must be the Barchinua sort of wrote something mistaken, it must be that he understood it that way as well, and that's the way it goes. So it's got to be a mistake, he says. It's got to be a mistake, and there's no debate about the fact that you can eat it that night. That night counts as part of the previous day. So therefore, it has to be what Rabbi Yonah says, that you eat it on the week after, right? This is more complicated. Not only did he say you eat it the night after, he said you eat it the week after. So it's got to be that when he says the week after, here Rav Moshe, you can see that he's really trying hard because he's going to say, it can't mean the week after because after Shabbos, right? It sounds like on Shabbos, you don't eat it at all, you only eat it after Shabbos. And that's clearly not true because the essential obligation is to eat it on Shabbat because that's when the Pusik actually refers to eating it on Shabbos. It can't be that you're not allowed to eat it on Shabbos. It's got to be that in some way that Shabbos is in play here in terms of eating it. So it's got to be something else, as Rav Moshe Feinstein. So to get to his explanation for Rabbi Yonah, Rav Moshe Feinstein first points out that when the Mishnah just said there was never a psul, and that leaves it open to us to understand what kinds of psulim you would have imagined there never were. What kind of psulim were there? So what would be the obvious case? The obvious case of psulim would be, the obvious example would be tumah. Would be that something got tame somehow. It got ritually impure and therefore couldn't be offered. Rabbeinu doesn't say that. Another option theoretically would have been that it would have been yotze, that it would have left the Yerushalayim before it was offered, and then it's invalid to be offered in that way. And Rabbeinu doesn't say that as well either. And then he points out that Rashi in the writes that the problem with all of this is, and the reason why it was so crucial that there never be a psul, that it'd be so crucial that there never be a something invalid about it, is that you didn't have time to make it again. Because you found a psul, it would turn out that it was a Shabbos. You can't bake it on Shabbos. You wouldn't have lechem apanim for a whole week. That's why it was so crucial. So it seems like we're talking about things that make a psul, that make a problem after you've already offered them. Because otherwise, why not just bake new ones? Meaning, if the problem is they get tameh, so if it got tameh on Shabbos itself, you have a problem. If it got tameh on Friday, what's the big deal? Right? So, or if it was Yotze, especially Yotze happens before it was brought on the Shulchan Aparim, on the Lech Aparim, because you can't imagine, Rav Moshe says, nobody can imagine that you take the bread off the Shulchan when it wasn't the right time, take it out of Yerushalayim and then bring it back, or take it out of the right place and bring it back. That's not really an imaginable scenario that you would call it a miracle that it never happened. It's more likely, he thinks, and this is what others seem to say, that it never got Tameh, right? That it never got ritually impure, because that can happen even once it's already on the Shulchan. If you have a Kohen who doesn't realize he's tummy, doesn't know he's tummy, and touches it, you can imagine it happening. So the fact that it never happened, that would be kind of miraculous. In hundreds of years, such a thing never happened. But that's not where Rabbeinu Yonah went with. So that's part of what he's trying to work his way to understanding. So Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that Rabbeinu Yonah hold she'ein lachush l'tumah, you don't have to worry about tumah, because we have a principle, and this comes up in other places that we'll see in a second, tumah hutra bat tzibur. So tumah hutra bat tzibur means that if something happens to something relevant to the community, a place where this comes up, for example, is a Korban Pesach. If most of the Jewish people are tmeim, become ritually impure, then you can offer the Korban Pesach anyway because of tumah hutra bat tzibur. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, so just the fact that the lechem apanim might have gotten tameh wouldn't have been enough, wouldn't have been a concern in terms of lechem apanim, because you don't need a miracle for that. Because let's say a kohen happened to touch the lechem apanim, who cares? Not who cares like who cares, but who cares because tumah hutra bat tzibur. If tumah hutra bat tzibur, then you don't really have to worry about it. So that's what Rav Moshe Feinstein is suggesting. In other words, here's how he's gotten to where he is. He seems to be clear. He is clear that it can't be that you can eat the lechem panim more than 11 days after it was put on the thing. That's what we know from the Mishnah. In his mind, that means that it must be that the 11 days In the case of the Mishnah was 11 days from when there was a Rosh Hashanah on a Thursday, Friday, the following Motzei Yom Kippur would be when you would eat it. That shows that you can't even be on there. So he's very clear and it's very firm. Sorry. So that's how Rav Moshe Feinstein was convinced that it has to be eaten that night. I will say that the other Achronim who deal with this suggest that maybe Rav Yonah just read that Mishnah differently. The Mishnah didn't mean that the longest time that it can be eaten at all is 11 days. It meant the longest time until it's starting to be eaten is 11 days, but then in fact you have the whole next week. If you would hold that way, then the whole problem goes away, right? Rav Moshe Feinstein's whole proof was because we know that you have to eat the lechem panim by the end of that night, but it's not true. So now that he's come here, that whole train of thought took him to the point where has to be the Yeftida that night. Then the question is, what's the miracle that we're talking about? And why is the miracle all of a sudden a miracle of that it was never eaten longer than it was, which would be a problem of Lina? Why not be the psul of Tumah? Right? It can't be the psul of Yotzeh, that it went out of Yerushalayim, because that's a stretch. Rav Moshe thinks Rabbi Yonah thought, that's a stretch to imagine, because remember that the only problem has to be a problem that happens once it got onto the table, because if the problem happened on the Friday, you could just bake new ones. So it's a problem that once it got onto the table is the issue. Once it got onto the Shulchan is the issue, because then it's irreplaceable. So to be Yotzeh, to have something go out of Yerushalayim after that, is an odd thing to imagine, therefore they don't imagine it. So the other option would be Tumah, other than what Rabbi Yonah has, there would be Tumah that it got tummy, got ritually impure. Problem with that is, there's for Rabbi Yonah, Tumah Hot Rabbi Tzibur, that when you have a community that something gets tummy, they don't have to pay attention to it, because for a whole community, Tumah is Hutra. Tumah was allowed. So he says, V'ein l'hak shut mechanaka. So the Rabbi Moshe's answer was, so therefore, Rabbi Yonah thought, since Tumah is allowed, you wouldn't need a miracle. Now, it's not like you want to have Tumah. It's not like you care about Tumah. I mean, it's not like you're just fine with the fact that we'll have to allow Tumah to work and we'll say Tumah Mutter B'Tzibur. Well, that's not true. But what is true is that it's not a good enough, it's not an important enough issue to make a miracle out of it. That's what Rav Moshe suggests. Because after all, for Pesach, when you wanted to have the Jewish people bring Korban Pesach, they were all Tamei, or the majority Tamei, you know what you did? You brought the Korban Pesach anyway. Apparently, it wasn't worth making a miracle over. So if it wasn't worth making a miracle over, then that would be the answer for the Lechem Panim. Problem with that answer is, you think it's a problem, Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to deal with is, v'ein l'hakshot mechanaka, don't ask a question of Chanukah, meaning, one of the issues with Chanukah is, why do we make such a big fuss about the fact that the oil lasted for 8 days and they didn't have to worry about it, right? Because, what do we say? They needed 8 days to make new tar oil. They only had enough tar oil, another ritually pure oil, to last them for 1 day. So you use ritually impure oil, because after all, Tumah, Hutra, Betzibor. Right, Tumah is allowed in Tzibur. That's a question that people ask about Chanukah in general, and they have all sorts of answers, right? You want to do it in the best possible way. That's why Mahadrin is important. It's a Chanukah question. So Rav Moshe here says, don't ask about Chanukah that you had a miracle just over the problem of Tumah Hutra Tzibur, because there are people who answer there that it was Laharot Chibatan Shel Yisrael Shehu Rak L'Zman HaNitzachon, that it was a reaction to the victory in war, that it was sort of, people suggest that it was Hashem's response, as it were, to the victory in war, that because the Jews had put themselves out to fight a war, Hashem reciprocated by not making them make use of this way out of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. So if that's true, then it wouldn't help apply to the Lechem upon him. And therefore, Rabbi Yonah says that in terms of being Nifsal B'Yotzeh or Belina, that's where the Siluk, that's where after the getting off the Shulchan, meaning even after it came off the table, nobody ever brought it out of the proper place. They all ate it in the proper place. And it's because of the mitzvah of their eating them. It never happened. And nothing ever went wrong in the eating of them because of how great the Lechem upon him was, or the Shtei Alechem. So mostly, he says, that's not so complicated. Meaning, mostly, on the most Shabbatot, you give out the Lechem Panim during the day, and people eat it that day and that night. So the fact that nobody ever took it in the wrong place, these are Kohanim after all, you would expect them to eat things in the right place, and the fact that they never left it over, that's not so surprising. But Moshe Feinstein says, and now he's bringing it around to the language of Rabbi Yonah, because even if you're going to claim that eating it that night is like eating it the previous day, but also can Rabbi had spoken about it, they never ate it beyond the following week. Why would he speak about the following week? So he says, the Shabbos after Yom Kippur is the good example. Why is the Shabbos after Yom Kippur the good example? I'm sorry, the Motzei Yom Kippur example, where Rosh Hashanah was Thursday, Friday, that was the longest there were. That's where the week becomes an issue. Why? Because on that Yom Kippur, you don't give out the Lechem Panim. People are so busy with Yom Kippur, it's not a time to be dividing up or living up the Lechem Panim. So that in that case, you wouldn't do it till that night. Imagine breaking your fast on Lechem Panim. So you wouldn't give it out till that night. And therefore, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says, that's when you would call it, refer to it as Shavua Achar HaShabbat, as the week after Shabbos. Why? So now he says, Shemotzei Shabbat Nikra Shavua Achar HaShabbat. Because Motzei Shabbos is always called the week after. So notice that he's now playing the game both ways. And I'm just not sure that I'm comfortable with that personally, but this is his tshuva, so we don't have to think about that, right? What he's saying is, he spent a long time trying to prove that eating it that night is really like eating it that day, because when it comes to kachim, to sacrifices, to things having to do with the temple, halayla ocheda kacharayom, the night follows the day. So that's all part of the same thing. So clearly you could eat it still that night, and that's as long as you could eat it. But now he wants to say, but also that Motzei Shabbat is called the next week. Now, the truth is, he's right in terms of ordinary terms. It's called the next week, right? If we always say, good vach after Shabbos is over, have a good week, right? The week starts on Motzei Shabbat Sunday. So it is the next week. So what he's trying to say is that on a night like that, Rabbi Yonah, in that situation, was saying that they started eating it that next week, even though they couldn't eat it beyond that night, and that's why it's referred to it that way. So that's where Moshe Feinstein solves this problem. That is not a problem or an issue that has any halakhic ramifications beyond our ability to understand Pirkei Avot with Rabbi Yonah's commentary, which is itself an important thing. We should very much strive to understand Pirkei Avot with its commentary, and that's what Rabbi Moshe has done for us on this tshuva from the 25th of Sivan of 1958. That didn't take us all our time, so let's do one other brief tshuva that he had, also from the 25th of Sivan, this one from Tavshin Chaf Bet from 1962, and this also will be very brief. Today will be a relatively short day, in case I've ever taken too much of your time. This will be brief. He's writing to, this is from Yoredeia, Volume 3, in Part 3, third time he did Yoredeia Tshuvot, Simon Sabach Gimel, response number 63, and he's writing to a Rav in Rochester, and they're worried about mikveh issues. So this will be a very brief introduction to some important mikveh issues. So it seems like the mikveh at the time, this is 1962, and yet setting up things like mikveh were still a big issue for the Jewish community. At the time, the mikveh in Rochester was using, they were piping in regular city water. Or maybe they weren't piping it in, maybe they were finding a place where it was gathered, but it was city water that had been through pipes before, and therefore it's a problem. And also, now, so if you've ever been to mikveh, so depending who you are, I hope you've been to mikveh, or depending who you are, you may not have been to mikveh, but many, many men go every Rosh Hashanah or every Yom Kippur, and married women, we hope, go regularly. So people go to mikveh to see a pool of water, and they step down into the pool of water, and that water has mem sa'ah in it, has 40 sa'ah, and therefore it's all okay, and they use it. But what usually happens in a mikveh is you want to have more than one. And the reason why you have more than one is that if you have the original water that has good mikveh water in it, mikveh water has to be rainwater or river water that's never been through piping, and all sorts of rules about the water they can have. So what you often do is you have a bore, you have two bores, you have two pits of water. You have two collections of water, one of which with the real water, and the other one which you can pipe in water to, and then you do hashaka, which means you make a hole between the two mikvaot, and the water sort of interacts between the two, and that makes the whole second bor, the second mikvah, the water is seen as interacting so much that it all becomes valid mikveh water. But that second bor in this mikveh in Rochester, this second bor was nistam b'chli barzel. It was closed with a metal, brass closure, a metal closure, and that's mekabel tuma, that could get tameh, and that's not valid for closing up, for sealing up a mikveh, and therefore that was a problem. So he says, you don't have to go that far. He says, that's true, that's a problem, but I don't even have to go that far. Why don't I even have to go that far? I don't have to go that far because the city water is probably pustle, because it always gets piped places, and therefore it's pustle. Itself is not, that's not rainwater, and therefore it's not good for a mikveh. So what you have to do is, you have to make a bore, you have to make a pit or a well or an open, not a well, an opening that can collect 40 sa'a of water, however much that is, you know, the amounts that we go into mikvahs in, and that has to be open, left open to get rainwater to go into it. And once you get the rainwater in it, you want to make sure it never goes below 40 sa'a again, because as long as there's 40 sa'a of the rainwater, you can pipe in all sorts of other water and it won't make it pustle. It won't make it invalid. So then once you have this bore that you've made with rainwater, you put it next to the mikvah that people are going to immerse in. And then what you can do is you can do a hashaka. As long as you open an opening between the two, then the piped in water in the place that people go to the mikvah is considered to be part of the rainwater that went into the rainwater bore, and then you have it set up in the proper way. So he says also, you should make sure that the rainwater one, the way the rainwater gets in, it has to come in a kosher way, meaning there are all sorts of halakhos that I'm not up on, but things like, you know, it's not that you can't use a pipe at all, but the pipes that you use have to be not of metal, and I think, and they have to be connected to the ground, like solidly connected to the ground, and then it's not considered like piping. So you can sort of direct water to this bore. It doesn't have to be that you sit in the open air until such time as rainwater falls into it directly. There are ways to do it, but you have to make sure you do it in a kosher way. And also in the Hashaka, he says you have to make sure that it's the right way. And there are all halachos about the opening you can have between the two bores. And then he says, and by the way, if you could get two openings, two pits that have megashem, that have rainwater in them, that one of them would be pure rainwater, the other one, the second one, would be rainwater mixed with piped water that comes in, and then that will get overwhelmed by the rainwater, and then the third one would be the mikvah. That's even better, because it turns out that there is the opinion of the Ravid and Rabbeinu Yerucham that they thought you needed to do that. Meaning, we generally think that Hashaka is, if you have rainwater in one pit and piped in water in another pit, and you have the openings, so then the openings let the mikvah become thought of as pure rainwater. But apparently, Rabbeinu Yerucham held that no, that's not good enough. You need to have the pure rainwater that can then mix with a mixture of rainwater and other water that the other water was Zoreya, you overcame it by the mikvah water overcoming it, and then only then that'll connect to the mikvah itself. But you don't have to do it, because most Rishonim hold not that way, don't hold that way. They hold that you only have need to have two, and therefore you should be okay if you have a bor chad of rainwater, and the second bor with the mikvah itself, that should be okay. So that is another truth from the 25th of Sivan, which we're fighting that one about the ways of building a mikveh in Rochester. And we close with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hochhauser for their help in putting these shirim online. Two shuvot for the 20th of Sivan, the main one being about how Rabbeinu Yonah could have imagined eating lechem upon him after Motzei Shabbat, and the second one about building a mikveh in Rochester. I bid you a good day.